So in a few minutes, Venerable Amy will be coming through this door. And if you've never been here before, if you would please stand out of respect for her and the teachings. And I believe she may welcome everyone to prostrate along with her. And if you feel uncomfortable prostrating, you're free to just remain standing. And then she'll sit on the throne and then welcome us to sit down. We'll be saying some prayers. If she lets me do it, the usual routine will be some prayers in the Gold Prayer Book. The first one is on page 183. It's the Shakyamuni Buddhist mantra. And then I'll indicate where the other prayers are. If you don't have a Gold Prayer Book, you have a white binder. Most of the prayers are on the first sheet that says Kadampa Center prayers, I believe, either on the front or the back of the first sheet with the prayers on it. Today is the last day of the month of Sakadawa. Oh, you have some...
Go ahead.
Okay, so, you know, our merit is multiplied, maybe, I think, by the million. So if it's a good idea to walk, circumambulate the stupa and spin prayer wheels, don't make donations, show practice generosity, whatever. $1 is one merit of 1 million. Okay. All right, Donna.
Good morning and welcome. I just wanted to tell you, those of you who haven't had a chance to see Venerable Amy teach yet this weekend, a little bit about her. She first encountered the Dharma in an intensive way when she went to a course at Kopan Monastery in Kathmandu. Kopan Monastery was founded by Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is the spiritual director of our parent organization. She's been teaching since 1992, and she ordained in the year 2000. And she teaches extensively at FPMT centers. Go ahead, Kandala. Around the United States and around the world. She also has led pilgrimages in India and Nepal to all the holy Buddhist sites, in Tibet, in Bhutan, and she's going to be leading quite an extraordinary-sounding adventure in September of next year, trekking along the Everest Trail up to Laodo, which is the cave where Lama Zopa Rinpoche practiced as a young man. So that would be quite an adventure if you can go to that. And her website information is out on the bulletin board near the side entrance, if you and you can get more information from her website about that. I think Venerable Lama mentioned the prostrations. And then the other thing is I'll just mention that everything we do at Kadampa Center, as you're probably all aware, is offered without asking a charge, because we don't want the teachings to be anybody to be excluded from the teachings because of money. But we do have expenses in bringing a wonderful visiting teacher like Venerable Amy here. So if you are moved to make a donation, we have donation boxes, one right outside the Gampa and one near the front door. And, of course, you can donate online. And if you would like to offer Venerable Amy a kata at the end of the teachings today, always appropriate, and we're also going to be gathering for a little group photo at the end of the teachings today. Thanks.
While we're waiting, I'd like to read and thank our sponsors here and read their dedications. Susie Boehm, in gratitude for the kindness of all our Dharma teachers. Neil Oldham, to the Sangha and their spread of the Dharma, with special thanks to Venerable Amy for her work on Buddhism in a nutshell. Sandy Carlson, any positive potential created by this sponsorship is dedicated to the long, healthy, happy lives of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Khen Rinpoche, Jetsun Losan Dalek, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Geshe Gelug, Geshe Sangpo, Venerable Amy, and all our precious Sangha. May Kadampa Center's community continue to be of benefit to each other and countless sentient beings for eons and eons. Donna Cease, by hearing these precious teachings, may we create the cause to see emptiness directly and liberate ourselves from samsara. Having freed ourselves, may we become Buddhas and return to lead all sentient beings to the bliss of liberation. Diane Mayer, dedicated to Joan Loeb Miller, mentor and guide, John Castelow. May our precious teacher stay with us all the way to enlightenment.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming. Very happy to be here. And my name's Amy Miller, for those of you I haven't met yet. And I just didn't know, do you start with some prayers this morning?
Yes, usually. Okay.
In the Gold Prayer Book, turn to page 183. It's probably one of the first pages in the white binder under Kadamba Sunda Prayers, and we'll chant the Shakyamuni Buddhist mantra. It's between two lines in the Gold Prayer Book.
And what time is the children stay the whole time?
No, just for doing the prayers.
Oh, because I just want to have a little talk with the kids before they leave.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so I thought, okay, I don't want to lose them too quickly. So, is that okay? Okay.
Taya ta mone mone ma mone so turn to page 34 in the Gold Prayer Book, and we'll read the four immeasurables in English one time. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now turn the page to 37.
So can I interrupt for a second? Sorry. So the four immeasurable prayers we just recited, you know, it's really important when you do the prayers to think about what you're saying. So what happens is it becomes rote, meaning you just start saying and you don't have any thought. So these prayers, like you can be driving and you're in traffic and you're starting to get irritated with somebody driving or, you know, may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. Right? You send that out there. You know, you're frustrated. May all beings be free of suffering. You read the news one day, and, you know, the news has many unpleasant things in it. People say, what can I do? It's overwhelming. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. Really give it some meaning in here, like that. The other thing is, maybe I mentioned this before. Did any of you guys see Star Wars films?
Yeah.
Or too young? No? You saw, okay? So, The Return of the Jedi. Are you all becoming Jedi Knights?
No.
Right? You're not? Jedi Knights are about bringing all the light inside of you. Right? Becoming a Bodhisattva is like becoming a Jedi Knight. Okay? So, I don't know, the Return of the Jedi, am I speaking anybody's language here or no? Okay? Sorry. I don't know. They said they remastered it and reformatted it digitally. And this might be left out now, but I'm not sure. But the original one I saw, at the end, the Ewoks that are going through this computer-generated redwood forest, right? Right? Well, they're chanting. Remember the Ewoks? Anybody remember?
Yes.
This is an old movie. Really old movie, I know that, right? They're chanting the Four Immeasurables in Tibetan, clear as day. Some chan dan jay da wa dang da wa. I mean, you can hear in the original, it's clear as day. So if you're a big, famous filmmaker, you can put Dharma in your movie and it goes out to a massive audience and plants a seed. Okay? Who knows? What, you know, it's very interesting. So the four measurables, so I just want to mention that. Okay? It will never be the same for you again.
Okay, on the bottom of page 37, let's chant Chenrezig's mantra 8 times and then Green Tara's mantra 7 times, keeping in mind the people on the prayer list that I read earlier.
Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha, 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.
So Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. So when you are having, any of you having issues in your life, some obstacles appear to finding the right house, paying your mortgage, finding an apartment, you're in traffic, you're on a plane with turbulence, right? Looking for parking space in Manhattan, okay? Maybe that's not. But you know, you wanna share somebody's toy and they don't want to share it with you, right? That ever happen?
Yeah.
Okay? So what do you do? How does that feel?
Well, yeah.
It doesn't feel really good.
Yeah, but somebody didn't actually want to share a toy with me. I wanted her to share, Angie, to share a water balloon.
And she wouldn't share a water balloon. So what happens is we sometimes get a little upset in here, right?
Yeah.
And this gets really small. This is the mantra. So instead of getting angry and then wanting to hit, wanting to take my toy and shutting down, closing up, getting depressed, getting anxious, freaking out, right? Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. Just turn it into that. Familiarize your mind with that. Okay? She's there. You know, when I'm on a plane and the plane gets really bumpy, has that ever happened to anybody?
Yeah.
You're on a plane and you know, you see people around you kind of like, you know. So there's 21 versions of Tara. Yeah, here they are. Here's all the power babes, okay? So really, right? Here she is. She's beautiful green goddess, emerald jewel goddess. So I just, plane gets really turbulent. I got 21 Taras holding the plane up. You know, they're like, we got you, girl. Okay? So it's like you can just bring these things into when you're suffering, something's difficult for you. These mantras are very helpful. The energy's there. These beings, I think, come kind of when you call them like that. So are you having a good day today or an other kind of day?
Good.
It's a good day. It's a good day? So when you have a good day, and in fact when you have another day, we can all kind of do this little quick exercise. And I'm looking for one of my, because I don't know a lot of you, but there's one kid that I do know from here and I was looking for him. Otavia? Is he? He's not here. Okay, one of my favorite kids. I was hoping to see him. What you can do, and I just thought we'd do a little exercise, is I want you to just close your eyes for a moment. And I want you to visualize at your heart center, so not really the heart, the organ, but in the center of your core, I want you to visualize a flower. You can choose any flower that you like. And all of your loving kindness, all the kindness you practice through the day is like watering the flower and shining sun on the flower and feeding and nourishing the flower so the flower can grow and blossom and have a delicious scent, if it does, to spread around like that and to help people.
Yeah.
'Cause many flowers are helpful. So in our kindness through the day, we want to try to keep the flower open and growing and healthy as much as possible. And sometimes we notice that our flower has wilted due to stress and not sharing toys and not getting what we want and pain and losing something and losing someone. So we can always kind of come back in contact with that flower, like a little jewel in our heart, and just think about how we're nourishing the flower and keeping it open. And thinking about what kind of flower are you showing to others throughout the day. So just relax and open your eyes. What kind of flower did you have? A white one, very nice.
Pink one.
You had a pink one. What kind of flower did you have? A purple one. Did you have any specific kind of flower?
Sunflower.
A sunflower.
I had a violet.
A violet.
Oh, I had a...
What was your flower?
A lello one.
A lello one. Wonderful. I also had a lello one as well.
Yeah.
And a...
I had a calla lily.
A calla lily, very nice.
A tulip.
A tulip, very nice. Any roses out there? Very nice. Any lilacs? Because I just came back from Vermont, and there are walls of lilacs up there now. One of my favorites. What did you have?
Sunflower.
A sunflower, very nice. So can you work on keeping your flowers open and happy and growing and nourished?
Yes.
And what happens when you get mad at mom or dad? What happens to your flower?
They go away.
They go away. That's so sad.
And that was not being on the real flower.
So what you want to do, this is what you want to do. When mom or dad tell you something that makes your flower go away, don't you want to go in there and try to find that flower again?
Yeah.
Instead of getting mad at mom or dad and not listening to them? What's kind of cool is go inside and figure out what made my flower go away. Because it's probably something inside yourself, and the flower's in there. So you want to try to keep that flower when mom or dad are talking and you don't like what they're saying, or a teacher says something. You want to try to keep that flower. You want to continue. The practice is to keep that flower as open and spacious and healthy as much as possible. Think you can do that?
Yeah.
You try your best, okay? Try your best. So, does everybody love Kadampa Center?
Yes.
Yes, we do. Do you have any questions you want to ask? You like the train? We all love trains. Trains are great, right?
Yes.
I'm glad, happy to see some train men and women here. Right? My nephews had overalls. They were train men with their train hats. They loved to ride the New York subway and the trains. And there it goes. It's pretty fun, isn't it? So are we at Kadampa Center? You know what we're doing?
Yeah.
We're on the Dharma train. We are on the Dharma train here. And the Dharma train leads you to inner peace and happiness.
Peace lifts the power.
Yay! Right on, okay? The Dharma train does that, and the Dharma train is about keeping the flower open. The flower is connected to the Dharma train, like that. So there it goes. And so that's a little bit kind of cool that Kadampa Center is next to a train that goes by sometimes. Isn't that cool? Not many Dharma centers are like that. Especially retreat centers. Right? So, do you guys have any questions you might want to ask? What's your question? I'm just asking, does anybody have any questions they might want to ask me? Yeah.
So, you would have to have happiness if you... had to if you have to do something that you wouldn't want to, you'll still need to have happiness, or else you'll get in trouble or something, and you do not want that. Right?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't... Many times we don't want to do stuff, right?
Right, yeah.
So, if you're miserable about it, does that help anybody?
No.
Not really. So better to have a more positive attitude, right? Right? Yes.
Why do the children get to go to their classes?
I think really whenever they like. Are you ready to go to your class?
No.
Oh, I don't know, was that a yes or a no? I can't really tell. No. Wait, we've got one last question.
No.
Right back there.
What's your question?
Do you have a question?
Well,
no, not yet. Okay. Maybe later. Or
I no.
What's that? What would you like to ask?
Listen to your mom.
What did? Say that.
Listen to your mom.
If
you're too busy playing, listen to your mom.
Okay, that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, stay with me.
So, I know somebody's ready for the kids program, so, can I get a quick photo with the kids? Is that, somebody, can I put it on my website?
Yeah.
No, the parent. No.
As a parent, yes. You don't want yes. your children's photo places, please. Let them.
Yeah, should I not do that?
Okay,
as long as their parents
are all here.
Okay. Is that okay? I would love that. But somebody kept telling me to please get pictures for the website, and I always forget, so I thought I'm trying to remember. Oh, do you want to do? Okay. Can you will email me the photos? Thank you. Can you guys squeeze in? I'll move my stuff. That's great. Here, squeeze in here. Here, you want to come?
Oh, no,
lovely. Can you see everybody?
Yeah.
Here, you want to stand here? Sorry. Okay. Just tell us when. Are we set? I need to hold on to somebody. Say bodhicitta.
Wait, what now?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Well, that was really exciting. I do want to say I don't know if you're aware how incredibly fortunate you are to have the center. I teach all over the world, and the United States I think is one of the more challenging places I teach. Seriously. So, and I'm an American. I'm from this culture, and I would never want to honestly ever take for granted the freedom I have in this country, based on my privilege. And so to find that the causes and conditions have come together here in this particular area to create, first of all, a center, to invite a great scholar to come from India like Geshe Gelick, a highest level Geshe, PhD, and then to create a children's program with that many children really speaks a lot about all of you and the community and the... So I just rejoice. Just please rejoice at the good fortune. We take a lot of these things for granted when you're in it and it's happening and you're doing it. And if you go to some other centers, the level of disharmony and the problems and the challenges and... I could go on and on. So please rejoice, and please continue to create, you know, to continue to grow the center and what you're doing. It's really, really beautiful. Because a lot of centers don't have kids, and most of the people are 50 years and older. So in 20 years, where's that center going to be? A lot of centers are struggling now because they can't seem to attract younger people. They don't have anybody that can really talk to teens or even people in their 20s. And they're different. They need something different. So it's brilliant that you can try to raise kids in the Dharma, and then they're going to revolt against you, and they're going to become Catholic, right? You know, we already know that. We already know that. That's okay. But, you know, they still have this foundation. And I do have some friends that in California, when I was there, they raised their kids in the Dharma, and the kids are now running centers. The kids are now involved with the centers, and it's really beautiful, and that's... You know, it's very, so I just really rejoice, and sorry to take away time from you guys, but I think it's important with the kids, and I love kids, so, and they're really quite sweet. So what I wanted to talk about now, and if we could just close our eyes for a moment, and again, from the prayers, find that precious motivation in yourself that you have woken up right now to another day in this incredibly glorious life you have. Now, I don't know all of you, and we all have problems. I'm aware of that. But the fact that you got yourself into this room right now tells me that you have a pretty glorious situation. So take a moment to allow yourself to experience the succulence of that situation, the gratitude. And allow yourself on every inhale to breathe it into your very bones and all the way even down to a cellular level. Gratitude. Appreciation. And that you created this for yourself. And it relates to your good qualities. And you have many good qualities. Even if you're not familiar with recognizing them. So from here, because we have this precious opportunity, take a moment to direct your awareness in a very positive way, to use this opportunity wisely throughout this entire day as much as you can by directing all the energy of your body, speech, and mind towards something that moves you along a path to full enlightenment. Because as a Buddha, as a fully awakened being, you're unlimited in benefiting all others. So if that interests you, the idea to benefit all other beings, to help all other beings perfectly, unlimitedly, just fold that into your motivation and take a moment to set a good motivation for this time and all the activities of the rest of your day. And just bring your awareness to your breath. And please relax and slowly open your eyes. Christine.
Hey! Wonderful.
Woman I sat next to on the plane on Friday. Thank you so much for coming. Sometimes I'm on planes looking like this, and the person next to me will, you know, you kind of, sometimes you say hi, you know, and then, you know, sometimes they'll ask me a question or one thing, and then they're like, okay. You know, they're kind of like really like, you know, like, I don't know, afraid sometimes. They're not sure what I am, really, I think. It's, you know. So Christine and I had a very nice, short, only an hour flight, so we had a nice connection. It was very great. So what I want to talk about this morning is, and I'm glad that the Pema Chodron book is here in the bookstore. This is a chapter that I was reading a couple of years ago on retreat that moved me, and it's a lot of the way I practice. So the book, I'm going to get the title wrong, but I think it's called like Living Beautifully with Uncertainty and Change. One of her newer books. It came out a few years ago. Living Beautifully with Uncertainty and Change. Has anyone read this book? Okay. It's a great book. It's, you know, her books are enormously practical. Very, very helpful. And this is something I've been working with people, and I love how, like, I'm in the middle of something, and then she has a book that comes out that really works with it. It's just fantastic. So this is one of the chapters called The Fundamental Ambiguity of Being Human. The Fundamental Ambiguity of Being Human. And this is the world we're living in right now. You know, it's an uncertain place, would you say? There's a lot of glory on our planet. There's a lot of glory in our culture. So I celebrate that, okay, by having, you know, some understanding of samsara. Okay, again, samsara, Sanskrit word meaning to cycle, to turn. We're turning through birth, old age, sickness, and death. All of that is suffering. Okay, but if that's the known, the given, and I accept that and understand a little bit of that, I actually feel like I enjoy more. I enjoy much more now. Because before, when you're in denial, okay, if I mentioned this the other day, the nature of water is moisture, right? So if you are in a swimming pool filled with water, you're not flailing around in it, going, it's wet here. Ah, what a surprise. But we do that with samsara every moment. My car breaks down and it ruins your entire day. You get the flu, right? And you're miserable and you're railing at your family, right? There's problems in families. People have financial difficulties, right? So Buddhism's about taking responsibility, waking up. What do you need to do? This is the context you're in. It's a broken situation. What are you going to do? Okay? So you do what you need to do, right? And then there's many things to celebrate. So the fundamental ambiguity of being human, and she quotes Suzuki Roshi in the very beginning, okay? Life is like stepping into a boat that is about to sail out to sea and sink, right? So even putting us aligned a little bit with the migrant crisis right now, where they're literally doing that, okay? But this is what it's about. Right? And part of it is funny, yeah, part of it is humorous, and part of it is kind of, we also laugh a little nervously, because this is the context. I've put my foot in a boat, and it's going out, and it's going to sink. So, how are you? How are you going to be in that? And this means with every problem that arises, where's your mind? Where's your mind? And what kind of patterns am I familiarizing my mind with? So that when the boat is sinking, I'm bright, I'm okay, I'm aware, I'm awake. Okay? Buddha, the Sanskrit word Buddha, fully awakened being. So how many times are you fully awake? Right? We wake up every morning, let's hope. You wake up, some days we're really very, very groggy. You're awake, you're going through the motions, coffee, shower, right? Yeah. How awake are you when you put your keys down and the mind wasn't there and you put your keys down? So later I'm like, where did I put the keys? That's not being awake. That's not being fully awake. So what would it be like to have that presence of mind? Okay? So, and here's what she goes on to say, talk about how can we live wholeheartedly in the face of impermanence, knowing that one day we're going to die? What is it like to realize, this one I loved, okay? Because this is this a lot of your life? I'm going to get to my practice. You know, and when I get the mortgage kind of sorted, I need to refinance, then I'm going to kind of start, you know, focusing on that course. Or then I'm going to get to that course for the center. You know, once I get my kid off to college, then I'm going to get my kind of altar set up. Right? Once I get that thing sorted, you know, in the autumn I'm going to... Okay, isn't it endless? And then the thing gets sorted, and then there's another thing to sort. Okay? So then she goes on to say, what's it like to realize we can never completely and finally get it all together? I found that liberating. Okay, let it go. Right? There's always going to be another thing. There's always going to be another thing. So let's try to start living presently, activating our practices now. Meaning activating what you're familiarizing your mind with. You know, and I would prefer that it gets channeled into something that's going to help you fully wake up. Right? So part of it is your priorities, checking in your priorities. You know, what's your mind familiar with now, would you say? I'm just curious. What's your mind when you wake up in the morning, what's your waking thought? Anybody? Do you know what that, are you in touch with that? I'm curious. What's your waking thought? I'm picking on you. Because you were...
Usually it's how lucky I am to get another day and I have two nice people in my life that I really love and I get to love.
Great, great. Other people waking thought? Be honest. It's too early for this, right? Somebody in the back had their hand up?
Coffee. I need to get stuff done. Basically, mm-hmm. The first thing I do when I get up, I need to get stuff done.
Right. Okay, so you've got your lists, and you've got coffee. For most people, it's those couple things. And then also you got your, often their kids' names come up, or their, especially people with young kids. That's often. And then, so thank you that you're, so the thing is, you've got lists. Those lists are there all day. You got time for your lists. You know. So how about a little appreciation in the morning? You just woke up in this life you've got. I know there's problems, but you're not in Syria. Right? So what if you have a moment, you know, to first relish, like, wow, you wake up in a comfortable bed with ambient temperature. You know there's food downstairs that's healthy and nourishing, easily accessible. You got shelter. You maybe have some loving care in your life, people. Do you ever consider that? You know, he does. Right? He was practicing. He was, you know, okay. But really think about it, honestly. Because that gratitude is, and so there was a magazine article I read recently, I think I was talking about this on the plane maybe, but I can't remember the magazine. It was quite a good magazine. So the two, I mentioned this yesterday, they interviewed people, when are you deeply happy? When are you deeply happy? Like deeply content. Not just superficially happy, but you know what I mean. Inside, when there's really this fulfillment, like, that was a good day. Or you go to sleep and you know you're exactly where you're supposed to be in life. This is what I'm doing. and it's going well. And when you and so two things came out at the top of the list, in addition to things like helping others and having a loving family and friends and, you know, having meaningful work. And but the two top were gratitude and being present. So the gratitude really lights you up in the morning, even when you have the flu, have cancer, lost somebody, your kid is suffering. There's many things to be grateful for. If you decide not to pay attention to them during the day or ever, you're missing an opportunity. Okay. So even when you're especially in tragedy, you've already got a pattern of appreciating, so you're going to be able to find good things. I've met people with horrible situations in life, and they're just like, well, you know, it could be worse. You know, because they practice, in their mind is this imprint of, I'm going to see the bright side, I'm going to choose to glory, to revel in. Okay. And I also mentioned your good qualities earlier on. Your good qualities. What do you think about that? Are you in touch with your good qualities? Usually people get very, you know, I don't want to talk about that, right? So that's essential in the gratitude part. We're okay to kind of say, I have a nice house, bed, and I like my car, and I've got a good family, and I like my job, but we don't really acknowledge our good qualities, and that's necessary. It's a really, really important step. So again, it's up to you. You do have good qualities, everyone in here. I don't know all of you, but the fact you got yourself into this room right now, many, many good qualities you can mention. So if you're not used to that, you start practicing with small things. You know, you notice that, oh, I'm kind of patient and I'm not the first person to speak when people are clamoring in a group to speak. Sometimes I think that's a good quality. You know? But you might notice other, you know, I'm able to keep this job. I'm able to pay my bills. I'm able to raise children like that. And nobody's going to do it perfectly. Nobody raises kids perfectly, by the way. So give that one up. Okay. Because what school did you go to for parenting? What was the parenting school? Did you go to the Harvard parenting school and Oxford? No. You got the parenting school that your parents went to. Okay. Did they do it perfectly? Was it a five-star school? No. It's called the school where you do the best you can do. That's what parents do. So please give yourself credit for that. Because all you can do is your best. And we're going to make lots of mistakes here. Why? Because we're humans. We're not Buddhas. We're human beings. And the nature of that is it's flawed. So I'm not laying a trip on any of us. I'm just saying I'm very in full acknowledgement that I make mistakes. And now I'm totally okay with that. I didn't used to be. Shanka can probably tell you about that. He knew me from a long time ago when I had long hair, right? Very hard on myself, you know. I like to think I'm a recovering perfectionist. I like to think I'm in recovery, okay? So it's very helpful that I make mistakes. I just pick myself back up, okay? I'm on the sinking boat. That means you make mistakes. Okay, so what is it like to realize we can never completely and finally get it all together? Because I'm a human. It's okay. Yeah. You get your projects. You have your lists. Right? It's okay. What I notice is the interpersonal human connection we can make in a healthy way is one of the most important things we could do for the planet right now. Please try to spend some time doing that. Creating healthy relationships, please. With everybody. You see, His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Everybody he engages, he's best friends with everybody. He's, you know, amazing, right? Lost his country, had to watch 1.3 million Tibetans have been murdered by the communist Chinese, and he's like engaged, fully awake. Everybody, there's always an opportunity with everybody to make a new friend. So what's that kind of experience for you in life than the experience you have now if it's not like that? Is it any different? Okay, creating healthy relationships. You know, the lovely guy that, I'm not going to point him out, I don't want to embarrass him, the lovely guy who drove me here today, was just talking about in the emptiness course we're doing, we're going to finish today, and you're welcome to sit in if you haven't done the other parts of it, is And he said, but then what happens when you're in front of somebody? Like, you're having an argument with somebody right there. How does the emptiness apply to that? Okay, so all of this relates to having these healthy relationships with people. And that means, so everybody's my friend, which means with a friend when I have an argument, there's a little bit more space there, isn't there? To kind of forgive and kind of let go and say, okay, well, let's talk about it again. But we're going to analyze a little bit more with emptiness of how does this context of the argument fit and how does this person really exist like that. We talked a little bit about that yesterday. So creating these healthy relationships is, I find, just key to dissolving the disharmony on the planet like that. So you're not going to get everything together. I used to have lists. When I lived at the retreat center in the Redwoods, it took me 45 minutes to get to the main town driving to do errands. And I didn't like to go out a lot, so I'd go out once a week. Well, I had a huge list once a week. I had to get all these things, and everything had to happen in that period of time, and then I was going to meet a friend in the evening, you know, for dinner or something. All these lists. But what would happen is because I was running this center, and Santa Cruz is not that big of a place, when I would go out to do these errands, of course I would run into somebody that I knew that went to the center. And of course they wanted to tell me how to run the center. Okay? But often they had suggestions. And they were very good suggestions, a lot of them. And they were also people I really liked that I had relationships with. The better relationship I built with them, and the more of these relationships I had, the better for the center it was. Right? So, but I have my list. So I'd meet them and I'd be like, oh, hi, I got to go to the post office. Bye. I can't talk to you now. Because this other thing, you know, buying detergent is more important. It was like that. It was like, so what I did is I'd look at my list. This is because I can't always get it all together. I'd look at my list, go out for the day, and I actually halved my list. Either ripped it in half or took the most essential things that had to happen and put those on a new list. And I didn't even take the old list with me. You know, I just went, and that way I had space. So I ran into somebody at the post office, and I like, you know, and they say, you want to have a cup of tea? Yeah, I have time for a cup of tea. And then we've got, and so they don't feel brushed off, and they don't feel like, well, she never listens to me, and she has no room to hear any new, you know, ideas. But we had time, so the next time they come to the center, they're, you know, oh, can I help? Can I volunteer? I want to do that job. Can I do that? Right? And then it gets them more invested in the center, and then they're happy. So you're never going to have it all together. Okay? Is it possible? Here's the next thing. Is it possible to increase our tolerance for instability and change? Okay? How do you deal with small changes in your life? If you're not good with that, this is where you start to practice with the instability and change. How are you with small changes? Anybody? Terrible. Terrible. Great practice then. Right? Your friend cancels lunch at the last minute. How do you deal with it? Okay? Right? So if you're okay, now people always say, well, it depends. Okay? Your friend cancels lunch. It happens. Haven't you done that to people? Something suddenly came up, I can't make it. You know, you feel bad. How do you deal with it? Some people very fluid. Some people rigid. Angry for the rest of the day. It's going to ruin your day. Oprah Winfrey did an exercise about stress management. Maybe I mentioned this in another class back in here. A friend told me about this. She, the show was taping in Chicago some years ago, and what they did is they asked permission to film people. They have tickets to the show. I think they're free tickets, but you have to get tickets. And then they filmed people. They came up. We're really sorry, but we oversold the show today. You can't come in today, but we have a lovely gift for you, and we have tickets for you for tomorrow. And they film people's responses. What would your response be? Right? Get real with yourself. What would your response be?
I'm easy like that. When stuff like that happens, I try to just let it wash over me, so I would adjust very quickly and say thank you and enjoy the present. I can handle
great. Very good. So then you're going to work, that's fantastic. You're going to start to work with the bigger changes in your life. The biggest change we're going to go through is our death. And another big change on the way to that is loss of loved ones. very, very big changes, right? So if you've exercised a bit with the smaller changes, then knowing these things are going to come gives you a little bit more space to deal with it, right?
Question?
Yeah.
What if you deal better?
Thank you. I've had a lot of death in my taking care of people who are dying, and I deal with, I think, death well because I've been around it, losing people close to me. But I have a hard time dealing with, I feel like I always have to, maybe it's because I've been surrounded by loss a lot, that I feel like I have to control my environment, or I feel suffering a whole lot. And even through parts of my day, if something changes, it affects my emotions dramatically, where, I mean, I could just burst into tears. But it's not that I get angry, it's more, well, maybe sometimes, it's more that I feel a lot of suffering because of it. And I don't know how to completely relax.
Yes, yes. So part of that, I would think, I've done a lot of hospice work myself. And it's different than just taking care of loved ones dying. But part of taking care of loved ones dying, if you've had a lot of loss in your life, if you don't have the proper support for that, it manifests in other areas, just like you're saying. You're not able to relax, you're wound, and you're very, very sad as well. I mean, there's a grief that hasn't been properly finished. So slowly relax. It's absolutely normal. Nothing. And just slowly, and what you might want to do is, I've also worked with grief counselors, with people, with families. They have a different way of helping you get the support you need, even from inside yourself, that can give you a thing where you don't feel like you need to control everything, because you can't control anything but your mind. And this is a passage to controlling your mind, like that. So it's very normal, but I think you probably haven't gotten some of the, you know, better support in that way for yourself. Taking care of yourself is important when you're taking care of other people. When you're seeing other people out, meaning to die, the caregivers, and even taking care of elderly parents and stuff, you need a lot of support. And the grieving process is a normal process, okay, that you need to allow to have happen. Normal deaths of an old person, a long terminal illness, they say the normal cycle is about 2 years. Meaning 2 years that you might be sitting down to have some yogurt in the morning and you burst into tears. Very normal. Don't suppress it and repress it. There's no, it's just a normal thing that, like, but the thing is, it's important then for sudden deaths and premature deaths, death of a child, like that, they say it could take longer. Suicides could take longer. So the main thing is to allow the grief. It's something very important for the healing process, but also understand that the grieving process ends. So you don't want to end up a hostage or a victim for the rest of your life that identifies you. We do know people like that, right? They've never recovered from losing their child. Now, you're changed forever. There's no question. But I know people that got involved in support groups, and they, some years later, started to help other parents that lost kids from a very bright space, from deep knowledge, compassion for themselves. So that's an important step as well. That's helpful, yeah. Okay. So back to Oprah. How's it going for you there? You just told you can't get into the show. And they filmed. Anybody else want to? What would your response be?
If I can make it to the next show.
You're okay to make it to the next show?
If I can.
If I can, right? And how about back there?
Yeah, and that's what I would think as well. But I'm also thinking the natural human being would be like, I want some kind of compensation for my inability to go, you know, and that's where I hate being, I don't appreciate being human that way, because you can't control those things so easily, but people like yourself probably have worked very hard to control those types of things or work better with those things. You know what I'm saying at all?
But the thing is, that's our practice. That's all of us. I'm not that different than you. I'm not a big holy person. You know, I'm a nun, and, you know, because I wear maroon and don't have hair, please, you know, don't put me on a pedestal because I'm...
No, I just respect how hard you've worked to be where you are. That's the
No, whole. Thank you. No, I totally appreciate that. But what I'm saying is you can do it too. You can
That's
do it too.
One.
You're not any different. I mean, I also have afflictions, okay? I also have afflictions. I get angry. I get sad. I get, you know, and I'm always amazed where sometimes, especially new Buddhists, have this idea about a nun or a monk, or they, you know, they just don't know. And one of our lovely work study people at our center a few years ago came in, and I got to know her really well, and she's a dear friend now, and she said, I thought you were clairvoyant when I met you. Like, I, like they don't know, and then they'll say, like, you got angry? And I'm like, yeah, I'm human, you know, I'm absolutely. So this is the work we want to do then, is I think it's great to acknowledge, like, I don't know, I don't like being inconvenienced. Nobody does. Again, you're stepping in the boat about to sink. That's that boat. That life can be inconvenient. Schedules change. Friends cancel. You know, I've got two friends. I've got a friend who just came in from California. Her life has been difficult. Okay? So she's visiting me and another friend. We're very close, the three of us. Palled around in high school. And she's got this agenda of what's going to happen with the three of us for the 2 weeks that she's in, which is a little different than the agenda the other two of us have. So we're kind of, there's a little spinning out. And this morning there were a tremendous amount of text messages that I haven't even checked into yet. Because by the time I get back into it, it'll all kind of be sorted. And I didn't have to kind of be, you know, texting and then be like, no, not tomorrow, the next day, no, 10 o'clock, no. And it'll all be taken care of, you know, at the end. So it is inconvenient. That's just samsara. That's so partly, and when she filmed these people, it was so funny. People said it depended. Some people in the audience I'm teaching would say, oh, it depended how I'd feel. Because if I could go to the show the next day, but wrong. These two women came up from L.A., ready to go. This was the thing they had planned on. This was part of their Chicago trip together. Can't go. And they looked at each other and they said, well, we can't go anymore. We're flying back to L.A. tomorrow. But I guess we're going to go to the museum we weren't going to get to. So, okay, thanks for the gift. Very happy the rest of their day. One woman from Chicago lived down the street, could, you know, went ballistic. You grab the woman. You're going to get me into that show. You know. So, again, the stress level, it's up to you how much you want to add to, you know. And then the other thing is I love the secular mindfulness courses now of, it's not really Dharma, but it's a fantastic tool. Most of it anchored in your breath. Well, you're breathing anyway. This is going on all the time. Why don't you use it? You notice you're getting stressed, you start shallow breathing. That means you're not getting enough oxygen to parts of the brain that you need to function. That makes you more stressed. So, right? So I've used that now so habitually now, I start to get stressed. I'm just like, all right, whoa, let me take a deep breath. I might need 3 or 4 deep breaths, but by the end of the 4th breath, there's some space in my mind, and that lends to perspective. And then I can say, wow, this guy that I'm working for is really, I feel like he's a jerk right now, but I bet he's really not a jerk. But the beginning, before the 4 breaths, he's just a jerk, solidly existing from his own side, jerk, in all of his full jerkness, right? Okay, so this is about increasing our tolerance for instability and change. The beginning is, wake up to this is samsara. You know, this is the situation that we're in. There's a lot of unpredictability on our planet right now, uncertainty. Can I use them as vehicles to, can I embrace them as vehicles to transform my life? Right? Because it also opens you up to other people's suffering. I can be more expansive where I'm feeling uncertain about something, but if suddenly my friend's getting more of it, then suddenly I let go of my stuff and my compassion kicks in to helping them. But through my understanding and feeling the uncertainty, too. Okay. And again, I worked with the kids with the flowers at your heart, but so can I keep my heart as open as possible in the face of the uncertainty? Meaning, and this is something Pema Chodron talks about this a lot, staying with the discomfort. A lot of my spiritual practice is getting comfortable with the uncomfortable. This is an uncomfortable situation. Uncertainty, change, unpredictability. And sometimes the state of the world right now, or the fact that we're going to die, or the fact that I just had a fight with a friend of mine, or these are the situations. How can I keep my mind as open, heart-mind experience, I'll call it, as open as possible? And stay with the pain, okay? Because sometimes life is painful. But with us, it's like, let me get my escape hatch well-oiled, and I'm out of here. You can't escape it. It will come and bite you in the back at some point. That's how it is. Okay. And what was the thing I recently saw about fear, what fear means? Did people see this? Okay, you have options. Fear. People get afraid. These things rattle us, okay? So it's forget everything and run, or face everything and rise. What's your choice? What's your option? Because if you want to analyze what's underneath your fear, it's usually a loss of control. When you want to analyze that, what can you control? Only your mind. You can't fix your mother. You can't fix your husband or your kid or your boss. But if I deal with my mind, I can dismantle, okay, some of the mechanisms that are projecting out there negativity. And then all that negative stuff goes away. Make sense? So she got this term from a war correspondent. We were talking about another war correspondent this morning. Chris Hedges, who talked about and wrote about, in war, the moral ambiguity of human existence. Right? Whether to cling to the false security of our fixed ideas and tribal views, even though they bring us only momentary satisfaction, or to overcome our fear and make the leap to living an authentic life. What does that mean to you to be authentic? And how closely are you aligned with your authenticity? What do you think about that? It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, please.
I was just going to say, it's really hard to be authentic, I find, for me, because then it's, I mean, I could take in a situation with my job or something like that, like I'm a people pleaser and I want everyone to like me, but to effectively communicate with my coworkers, sometimes my coworkers might be being unreasonable, you know, so I have to communicate something to them that I know is going to get a negative response. So it's just a difficult thing to do. It's like you constantly have to motivate yourself to do that, even though, you know, I guess you want to constantly be in an environment where all the interactions are pleasant and everything is fine. You feel like everyone likes you, you know, but I just feel like sometimes being authentic, you can't always play that role. And that's when it's difficult for me. You know.
So what if you put it in the context first of samsara, meaning that means we're not all going to have pleasant experiences. It's unreasonable to think that. Number one, so okay, and I took on this job. You're managing people to some degree, or you're...
No, but I feel like I should be.
Okay, so maybe, there's an interesting thing. Maybe you might want to move into a role where you're managing people if you think you're skilled at that. You probably have some insight into a clear thing, and maybe you want to direct your life a little bit into that area. But in the present thing, if you have to say something to a coworker, right? There's no problem of it coming from your authentic self. You can't please everybody, number one, because again, samsara, it's not possible. That's not your job anyway. You know, you can't make other people happy, by the way. The happiness comes from within you. So maybe it's okay to let that go and take care of pleasing yourself. However, never lose the motivation that I'm here because I want to get fully awake to benefit others. So how am I doing with myself? You know. And then can you say something in kindness to the coworker where you got a little deal going with them? You know, what happened in this scene, I was a little confused when you did this. Or you know what, that was really hard for me. It didn't really seem to work. You know, you were acting like this or doing this, and it makes me feel like this. Like, rather than attacking them, this is what happens. Because you were like this, this is how I felt. This is how it impacted me. So I'm just kind of wondering if we can figure something out that might work better. That's authentic, isn't it? I mean, would that come from you? Do you feel that's authentic
to
you?
Yes, I definitely understand what you're saying, and I do definitely try to do that when I can, so I appreciate that.
I mean, you can only do your best. So sometimes you're going to try that, and the coworker, if they're not in the room here, they might be doing something totally different. And we're going to bump up in our culture against a lot of people that are not walking a similar path as us. So that's where I went, like, creating healthy relationships. If you become friends with the coworker, it's a totally different conversation because they're your buddy. And then it's different. And they can be different than us. They can be different from us. The example I gave, I think I mentioned this in a previous class another year. I was working in a law firm temping when I was 2 weeks, I was living at the center in San Francisco. We were getting it off the ground. So 3 years and 2 weeks a month I temp in a law firms in San Francisco. I had many different contracts with law firms. They paid me very, very well for very easy work. And it afforded me, I could work whenever I wanted, and I took off when a llama came to visit, and I managed the center and did the books, and it was great. But I didn't really like temping. It didn't really suit my personality, and the way some of the law firms treated the temps was kind of rude. But anyway, they pair me with a guy for about a month, Ted, right? Did I tell this story before? Yeah, anyway, they pair me with this guy, and he's old school. So he's Monday morning, comes out with the moldy coffee mug and wants me to wash it. And I didn't see that as part of my job, but he did. So instead of me saying something, I just, took the cup and resentfully went, and after the third day, I was like really irritated and stressed, and I hate my life, and what am I doing, and I'd given up my career to kind of help the center, and you're questioning things. This is the uncertainty and the unpredictability, but this had been my choice, but I wasn't so happy with the whole idea, and Ted became other and out there. And so after a week of this, I realized I'm so stressed, and so you're allowed to go to the bathroom and take a break, and in there, I notice I'm just like, what am I doing? I don't know if I should be doing this and temping. I gave up my career. I should go back and get a job and forget the center. But I really wanted the center to go, and sat and got my breathing going. Okay. It's no problem here. What is really the problem? Right? So, and then I remembered my motivation in the morning was to benefit all living beings. Become a Buddha to benefit all living beings. Because I've been practicing Buddhists for some years. To become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. All sentient beings. Okay? Lama Zopa Rinpoche is going to teach outside Asheville in August. If you hear Rinpoche, all sentient beings, right? All sentient beings. All. Okay? That means and Ted. Right? Right? But I left him out of the formula. Everybody but Ted. Not washing that coffee mug. How rude. He didn't even think about it. For him, it was like, that's what his secretaries had done. Like, he wasn't trying to poke me, right? So I come out, so suddenly I'm like, that includes Ted. What's the big deal? I would wash the coffee mug for my friend. He's not my friend yet. Okay? I come up, and now I have a new perspective. I'm like, and Ted, right? So I start analyzing Ted over the course of the weeks, days. Well, he's a really nice guy, very polite to me. Very respectful. I really liked him. We start talking. We get to know. He had moved up from L.A., from a very nice area where he lived in L.A. that he liked, to help this law firm get going, and wasn't really comfortable in San Francisco. I met his wife. His kids were living down in L.A., blah, blah, blah. I get to know him over the course of a month. Really like him, right? Come to one of my last days with him, okay? Well, now he's my friend. So it's Monday morning, and I'm anticipating the coffee mug. I want to wash it now. I do, because it's my friend. I want to help him out. So this is how you change your mind and the external reality changes. I'm not kidding you. He comes out in the morning. Hey, Amy, how you doing? How was the weekend? I'm like, oh, it was really good. I went to see this movie, da da da. And I said, how was your weekend? And I see he's got the coffee mug in his hand, right? And he says, oh, great, we're having this little exchange. And I reach for it. And then he looks and he goes, oh, my God, this is disgusting. I'm not going to have you wash this. And I said, no. I let me wash it, please. Like, he's like, I can't believe I'm going to give this to you. Right? Really? Like, seriously. Right? So then there's connection. So you do need to do the work on the cushion. You do need to do some formal practice to analyze what is the problem out there. What's the problem out there? What's the problem because I didn't get into the Oprah show today? You know, are you going to die because of that? You know, so putting things in perspective as well. And also assessing your priorities in life. If you want to be happier, you might need to reorganize some priorities. Meaning, I know people that tell me I don't have time to meditate. Okay? But they have time for social media. So really you don't have time to meditate? Because social media becomes another addiction and a habit, and immediately, you know, and then there goes a half an hour. So it's just your choice of, okay? So what are you clinging to? We do get some influence from our environment, the tribal views that this war correspondent's talking about. So again, in your authenticity, I just relayed a story this morning to Karen and David of some dynamic in my family of a couple people in the family that when they get together would dominate the entire conversation with a very exclusive conversation, right? That often had very negative aspects towards some of the other people. And this went on for, I was watching, like over the course of months, my family, I moved back to the East Coast, and I just noticed how I started to feel very uncomfortable around these two people. So when I found an appropriate moment, finally, I discussed it with one of them. That was my authenticity. Gently, compassionately, because coming from love, to say, when they invited me to sing, how come you don't go with us, the two of them? And I just explained, I didn't feel very safe. You know? Because they were trashing people with their speech, and they were only talking about this thing I knew nothing about, and that was, you know, and you just feel like an invisible person. And ignored, and, you know. And then, from that conversation, I was told that other people had said that to them, but they ignored it. So I was like the last straw. When he heard it from me, then he went, huh, maybe this is an issue. You know, and the dynamics changed. I wasn't blaming them. I was just saying, have fun, do what you want, but I can't always be in that space. That's my truth. So you can protect yourself a little bit, but from love, not from antagonism, because I don't like, 'cause you're a jerk. You know, I don't want to be with you. No, but, you know, I think I even said something like, I've done just so much work on myself, I can't put myself back in a scene where I feel really demeaned continually, degraded. Like I said, I don't know really what goes on for you guys, but that's not really where I want to be. So no problem, but, you know. And so I think if you put it and frame it in that with compassionate wisdom as much as you can, great, so it doesn't mean you have to buy in, and it's tricky. A lot of people we feel in our culture, we might be going up the mountain and you feel like everybody else is going back down. Am I missing something? Right? So bodhisattva warriors, Buddhist saints on our path trying to become a Buddha to benefit others, you armor yourself, okay, but with loving kindness and patience and generosity and your meditative concentration, a meditation practice, and as much wisdom as you've developed, like that. Compassion, those things. And bodhisattva warriors don't go to war with other beings. They only go to war with their limited concepts, their delusions, like anger and fear and anxiety and attachment, pride, jealousy, things like that. Okay, so how can we relax and have a genuine, passionate relationship with the fundamental uncertainty, the groundlessness of being human? Okay? So, and I think part of it is, again, a resolve to embrace the world just as it is. She goes on to say this, as much without judgment as possible. We judge a lot, don't we? Some of it's automatic. I know it's very hard to get, you know, immediately you see people and you're kind of like, tall, thin, this, you know, like that. So that goes out there. But it's nice, because of my meditation practice, honestly, because of the consistent meditation practice, and please try to set that up. Some of you well into it, great. If not, and you need more instruction and support, I mentioned I do have this website now, and they are very kind because they copied the card on the backboard because we ran out of some cards. But what some of the center in New York put some videos they did, and one of them is me talking about how you start your meditation practice. So no excuses anymore. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to start. It's right there. It's very simple how you get a practice started. Right? And then you can add meditations, and you can get a book like How to Meditate. I find this book really helpful. Kathleen McDonald. She is Venerable Sangye Kadro, our longest-term nun in our tradition. She's a dear friend. She's lovely. She wrote this book a long time ago. It's been revised. And just open the book, find a meditation you like, and you just read a couple sentences. Meditate on that. Go to the next sentence slowly. That's how you do it. And then you can learn and fine-tune things as you get going. It informs the space. This is the world just as it is. So for me now, because of that practice, I don't have any great realizations. However, I find I'm much more observant of my mind. I'm able to just sit, and I'll watch a sweeping judgment come out, but I don't react from there. Sometimes I talk with it, and I'll, with humor. Well, there's a really big opinion about her. Do I even know about her? No, but... Okay, so just watching fear arise or anger. I'm able to get anger now at irritation. So I can, at irritation, frustration, and annoyance are all smaller, lesser degrees of anger. So I can catch my mind there, take my toolbox out, apply my antidotes quickly, more skillfully, because I practiced it before I'm into full-blown anger, let alone rage. You can do that with each of the things. Before you get into full-on grasping and attachment, I'll notice a little like, you know, you're in the department store. They know just how to get you. Right? It's on sale. Oh, I'll buy two of them. Right? So I can just watch the mind go out. I don't really need that. You know. It's always interesting with the shopping meditation of, you go to the store to buy one thing, now you got five other things over your arm that you need. But what I say is, in the morning when you woke up, did you have any idea about those things? Any notion? No. Do you need them? So when I did exercises with people about grasping and attachment in relation to shopping, right, the exercise is you have to put everything back other than the thing you came for. And if you really want those other things, you are allowed to go back the next day and get them. You never go back. Rarely people go back. Okay? So it's just a way of countering. There's little techniques. Okay? So in embracing the world, make a determination to yourself to embrace the world just as it is, without bias. Okay? It's a commitment to see everything we encounter, good and bad, pleasant, unpleasant, as a manifestation of awakened energy. As a manifestation of awakened energy. Okay? There's a lesson in everything. Okay? And I am a proponent of the conspiracy theory. I don't know how many of you buy into this. We hear about a lot of conspiracies. 9/11 was a conspiracy, people say. Okay. But I'm a proponent. This is my conspiracy theory. Okay? Everyone is trying to get me enlightened. Right? Really. So, you know, I don't like you and you're bothering me. There's my mind. You are showing me my mind. Thank you. You know, and then I have to sit on my cushion to figure out what you're showing me, to analyze why I got upset, why I got irritated, and then role play the antidotes on your meditation cushion again and again and again, so that then the next time I'm in front of the person and this comes up, maybe they get accessed. That's how it works. You're rehearsing a certain behavior and a certain mindset, and you rehearse it enough, you become fully awakened. Okay? So one last thing I'll mention, there's a lot more I could go on, but I know we're out of time, is one of the helpful things I've also found is to... is that you always have a choice. She goes on, there's so many great things in this chapter, vulnerability, okay, which we see as weakness, If you've read any Brené Brown, anyone in here? She's wonderful. Brené Brown says vulnerability actually is the birthplace of creativity, innovation, and change. Well, that's different than weakness. I loved when she said, she does a TED Talk, but these corporate executives asked her to speak. They loved her. Great. She talked about, you know, invulnerability and creativity, innovation, and change. And they said, we want to hire you, want you to speak, pay her lots of money, whatever. We want you to talk about creativity, innovation, and change. Well, we don't want you to talk about vulnerability. Right. So notice these places when the uncertainty rears its head, when I'm having a fight with somebody, when I'm in pain, vulnerability, and that means you might need to adapt. That's the creativity, innovation, and change. And what we really need to do is adapt our way of thinking. Can you show up for that every day and try your best? Mainly, just try your best to do that, okay? And so a lot of times our practice is you're observing, you're aware of something you're doing. Okay, my mind, I just yelled at that person. I just had a little snippy interaction with this person. Okay? I'm saying if it's a negative thing you're not happy with, you're not satisfied with, okay, in the uncertainty, change, whatever, in your life. Okay? Number two step, this is simple. Do something different. Okay? Instead of your normal pattern that you did, try something different. The way it works best is I've got enough energy from my meditation practice, resources there that moves me to do something different. That engages you then there. Okay, now I know I did this before, this would never works like that. I'm going to think something different, say something different, or act differently. Okay? Step number three, do it again. Meaning familiarize yourself with it. With the thing you did, if it worked, you have to keep doing it again to familiarize yourself with it. Habituation. It's really the essence of what meditation means. Familiarize yourself with positive mind states. Okay? Sorry, we are out of time. This was just a little quick thing, but any last questions, comments? Yes.
When you were talking about being authentic, authenticity, the work that I do in prison, I find that it is extremely important to be authentic. I mean, these guys know a fake when they see one, you know, and they've been lied to enough, you know. So I whenever I begin my class, always tell them my story. Always tell them that I've been in and out of trouble. I'm an ex-junkie. I've been homeless. I've experienced those things. I know what anger is like. I know what rage is like. I understand fear. I tell them the only reason that I can go in and out of these doors at will is not because I never made mistakes. I never got caught for my crap. You know, mm-hmm. and right away, once you tell them their story, your story, then right away they begin to soften, and they begin to open up, they begin and then it becomes easier to work with them. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an imperative to be authentic, to be true to yourself. Because we BS ourselves all the time too.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, you know. So I think it's very imperative to be true to yourself and to be true to others around you. If you really want to do this kind of work,
mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, and I just want to share that.
Thank you. And I think there is that level that we BS ourselves. So initially there might come a time you're kind of down on your knees, really, like, this is who I am, because you've hidden from it for so long. I've had moments like that myself. But, you know, then the only way to go from there is up, you know, because finally it's like, you know, this... And also, can you take that experience with equanimity and generosity towards yourself? Self-compassion. You know, can I still hold myself and say, wow, I can't believe I hurt these people, or I used to be like this, or this is a quality I have That's part of the authenticity, waking up to that. And then you start to change it, if you feel like it needs changing. That it's part of being human. Well, thank you very much for coming. It's lovely to have all of you here. I hope this has been helpful. I'm sorry it's so short. And feel free if you want to, we start at 1:30. If you want to continue with us, feel free to jump in. And I'd like to dedicate any positive energy that we've created from this morning to really helping us waking up to our authenticity and finding the compassion in ourselves so we can actually move that out with all others we encounter, especially in a world right now that needs some healing and harmony. And can we also, can it help promote us, propel us on a path to full awakening so we can then unlimitedly help all other beings? As much I'd like to also dedicate to all the beings on the planet that need additional healing right now. Can they receive it fully, completely? And for the long lives of all of our teachers and all the beings who have passed away recently, can they be free of all their suffering and take a good rebirth to benefit all? We can dedicate to Muhammad Ali, passed away recently, so can he be peaceful like that. Thank you so much. I hope to see you again. If you're interested, I wanted to mention one last thing. There is a card. You can get my website there. There's a YouTube channel it's connected to. You can find helpful videos of a variety of teachings categorized by subject. And there's some other interesting things on the website. But I'm leading a pilgrimage in late September, early October 2017 to Laudo, which is a remote retreat center in Nepal in the Mount Everest region. So I'm going to be flying up with people. We'll be doing trekking. Basically, if you've ever wanted to trek in Nepal, that's what we're going to be doing to get to Laudo. We'll do a four-day retreat there. I'll take you to show you some of the local areas, especially where Lama Zopa Rinpoche was born, and then you're free to go and do any other trekking you'd like to do and visit. So if you're interested, there'll be more information on the website soon. There's now a slideshow about the walk and being up at Laudo you can look at on the website. So thank you very much, and hope to see you all again. Thank you for coming.